The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, and John Russell. Later, Jill Robbins answers a new question from an English learner. We close with the American story Transience in Arcadia by O. Henry. But first, over 270 students and teachers from the Afghanistan National Institute of Music arrived with their families this week in Portugal. The Western European country has offered them asylum. As a group, they hope to rebuild their famous school in their new home. The group fled Afghanistan over a period of 6 weeks in October and November. First, they went to Doha, Qatar. They arrived Monday in Portugal's capital, Lisbon. Governments, companies, and private donors paid for the group's evacuation and resettlement costs. Dr. Ahmad Sarmast is the institute's founder and director. On Monday, he said, "The arrival of the Institute's community today means that the first and most important step of saving lives and ensuring freedom is now over." The musicians are among tens of thousands of Afghans who have fled since Taliban fighters seized Afghanistan in August. That is when the U.S. and NATO ended their 20-year military presence. The Afghanistan girls' youth soccer team has also resettled in Portugal. The country has taken in 764 Afghans since the summer. Afghanistan has a strong musical tradition. A popular music scene also had grown there over the past 20 years. But many musicians fear for their futures under the Taliban. The Afghanistan National Institute of Music was founded in 2010. It became well known for its inclusiveness. It became a symbol of a new Afghanistan. Women and men studied together and performed to huge audiences in the United States and Europe. The school's campus in Kabul is now occupied by a Taliban group. Its bank accounts were seized. Its offices have been destroyed, former school officials say. The Afghan teachers and students plan to recreate the school in Portugal. This will permit the students to continue their education. The school will be part of a larger Lisbon-based center for Afghan culture that will continue to welcome exiles.
American singer Bruce Springsteen has reportedly sold his full music collection and publishing rights to Sony Music in a deal estimated to be worth $500 million. Music industry magazine Billboard reported the deal. The publication based its story on information provided by unnamed individuals who spoke about the deal. The agreement has not been publicly announced. Representatives for Sony Music did not comment on the report. Other music stars have also sold the rights to their work in recent years, including Tina Turner, David Bowie, Bob Dylan, and Stevie Nicks. But the Associated Press reports Springsteen's deal would be the largest so far. It includes 300 songs from more than 20 albums. Among them is one of the biggest sellers in history, 1984's Born in the USA. Warner Music bought worldwide rights to Bowie's music in September. Last year, Dylan sold his music collection of more than 600 songs to Universal Music Group in a deal estimated to be worth $300 million. The 72-year-old Springsteen has been with Sony's Columbia Records throughout his career, during which he has sold more than 150 million records. The singer-songwriter has won 20 Grammy Awards, 2 Golden Globes, and an Academy Award for Best Song for Streets of Philadelphia in 1993. Springsteen was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2016 by President Barack Obama. He has also been accepted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I'm Brian Lynn.
Computer security experts around the world are trying to fix one of the worst software weaknesses found in years. The vulnerability is in an open-source program widely used by government and industry. It has become a major threat to organizations around the world. "The internet's on fire right now," said Adam Myers. He is the vice president at the cybersecurity company CrowdStrike. The problem is found in an open-source Apache utility called Log4j. It is used to run websites and other web services. The vulnerability is known as Log4Shell. The software problem's severity was rated 10 on a scale from 1 to 10 by the Apache Software Foundation, which oversees development of the software. The vulnerability was reported on November 24th by the Chinese technology company Alibaba. It took 2 weeks to develop a patch. Last week, Myers said that within 12 hours of discovering the problem, it had been fully weaponized. He said criminals have already developed and distributed tools to exploit it. Experts say the bug, another word for a software problem, may be the worst computer weakness discovered in years. The Apache software is used in almost all cloud computing servers across industry and government. Unless it is fixed, the bug gives criminals the ability to easily access internal networks. There, they could steal important data, put malware in place, and do much more damage. Joe Sullivan is the head of security for Cloudflare, a company that protects websites from security threats. "I'd be hard-pressed to think of a company that's not at risk," he said. Millions of servers have the software, and experts said the impact would not be known for several days. Amit Yoren is the head of the cybersecurity company Tenable. He called it the single biggest, most critical vulnerability of the last decade, and maybe the history of modern computing. Experts said the vulnerability makes it easy for an attacker to access a web server and makes it very dangerous. there is no password required to access a server. Patching the bug could be a difficult job. Most organizations and cloud providers like Amazon should be able to update their web servers easily. But the same Apache software is also used by many third-party programs, which often can only be updated by their owners. Joren of Tenable said organizations need to act as if they have been affected and fix the problem. The first clear signs of the bug's exploitation appeared in Minecraft, an online game popular with children. Attackers were able to take over one of the world-building game's servers before Microsoft, which owns Minecraft, patched the problem. Microsoft said it had completed a software update for Minecraft users. Customers who apply the fix are protected, the company said. Researchers say the vulnerability could also be exploited in servers run by companies like Apple, Amazon, Twitter, and Cloudflare. I'm Dan Novak.
For the sixth year in a row, a building designer in Finland has created a very large work of art on a frozen lake. On Lake Pitkäjärvi, north of Helsinki, Pasi Widgren made an image of a fox that measures 90 meters from head to tail. He said he hopes the artwork will make people happy and move them to go for a walk in what he called beautiful nature. The 40-year-old Widgren lives near the city of Lahti, about a 90-minute drive northeast of the lake. He uses a shovel to create the artworks on ice. They melt from sight over time or disappear under snow. Widgren made his first ice picture in the winter of 2016. The artist recently told the Associated Press that the idea to make such pieces came to him suddenly. I realized I may have a special ability of coordination to do this, Widgren said. He visited Lake Pitkäjärvi on December 4th. He tested the thickness of the ice as soon as he arrived to make sure it was strong enough to walk and work on. At 10 to 15 centimeters thick, it was. After 4 hours of work, Widgren was done. He then walked up a hillside about 150 meters above the lake to get a good look at his large artwork. He took some pictures and video to mark the effort. Several days later, the picture was harder to see because it had snowed a little, Widgren said. But its lack of permanence is not a problem for its creator. It's very important to me also that making this kind of art doesn't leave any marks on nature, Widgren said. I'm John Russell.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Paul in the Czech Republic. Could you tell me the difference between the words aim, target, objective, and goal? When should I use each one? Dear Paul, thank you for writing to us. These words are similar. As nouns, they all mean something you are trying to do or make happen. But we often use two of them to describe an object we can touch. Both target and goal can be used in sports. In soccer, players try to get a ball into the other side's goal, an area at the end of the playing field marked by a net. we say a player scored a goal, as in this example.
Abby Wambach broke the women's soccer record by scoring 184 goals.
In the sport of archery, you try to make an arrow hit a target. We use the word this way to describe archery.
To get a high score, your arrow has to hit close to the center of the target.
When we use target to talk about what we want to do in the near term, it is often an exact number, as in this example.
Our sales target for the coming month is $1,000 a day.
Compare that with the use of goal to talk about a more general thing you want to make happen further in the future, as in,
it is her goal to become the president of the company.
We use those two words, as well as objective and aim, to talk about our purposes. Often people decide on their objectives as a group or organization. For example,
the senator said, "Our objective today is to pass this bill."
Finally, we can use aim as a verb, meaning to direct effort toward a goal in this way.
I aim to plant 10 trees today.
What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
In Arcadia. There is a certain hotel on Broadway that is very pleasant in the summer. Not many people have heard about it. It is wide and cool. Its rooms have walls of dark wood. There are green trees around it and soft winds. It has all the pleasures of mountain living and none of the pains. You will eat better fish there than you could catch for yourself in the streams and hills. You will have better meat than a hunter brings home from the forest. A few have discovered this cool spot in the hot summer of New York. You will see these few guests eating dinner in the hotel restaurant. They are happy to be there, and happy to know that they are very few. They feel especially wise, because they have found this delightful place. More waiters than necessary are always near. They bring what is wanted before anyone asks for it. The pleasing distant noise of Broadway sounds like running water in a forest. At every strange footstep, the guests turn quickly and look. They are afraid that the restless pleasure seekers will find their hotel and destroy its pleasant quiet. And so these few live during the hot season. They enjoy the delights of mountain and seashore. All is brought to them in their Broadway hotel. This summer, a lady came to the hotel giving this name,
Madame Louise d'Arcy Beaumont.
The name was like a name in the story of a great romance. And Madame Beaumont was the kind of lady the Hotel Lotus loved. She was beautiful, and her manner was very fine. Everyone wished to serve her. The other guests believed that, as a guest, she was perfection. This perfect guest did not often leave the hotel. In this, she was like the other guests of the Hotel Lotus. To enjoy that hotel, one needed to forget the city. New York might have been miles away. At night, sometimes one might go out, but during the hot day, one remained in the cool shade of the Lotus. Madame was alone in the Hotel Lotus. She was alone as a queen is alone because of her high position. She rose from bed late in the morning. She was then a sweet, soft person who seemed to shine quietly. But at dinner, she was different. She would wear a beautiful dress. I cannot find words fine enough to tell about it. Always there were red flowers at her shoulder. When the head waiter saw a dress like this, he met it at the door. You thought of Paris when you saw it, and of the theater, and of old romances. A story about Madame Beaumont was told among the guests in the Hotel Lotus. It was said that she was a woman who had traveled all over the world. It was said that she knew the most important people everywhere. It was said that in her white hands she held the future of certain nations. It was no surprise, they said, that such a lady should choose the Hotel Lotus. It was the most desirable and the most restful place in America during the heat of summer. On the third day of Madame Beaumont's stay in the hotel, a young man entered as a guest. His clothes were quiet, but good. His face was pleasant. His expression was that of a man who had traveled and could understand the world. He said that he would remain 3 or 4 days. He asked about the sailing of certain ships. He seemed to like this hotel the best of all he had known. The young man put his name down on the list of hotel guests. Harold Farrington. It was a name with a fine sound, and the young man belonged perfectly in the quiet life of the Lotus. In one day he became like all the other guests. Like them, he had his table and his waiter. He also had the same fear that the wrong people might suddenly discover this hotel and destroy its peace. After dinner on the next day, Madame Beaumont dropped something as she passed Harold Farrington's table. He picked it up and, following her, returned it. He spoke only a few quiet words as he did this, and she was pleased by his good manners. She knew that he was a gentleman. Guests of the Lotus seemed to understand each other very easily. Perhaps it was the result of having discovered this Broadway hotel. Guests felt sure that only especially fine people would enjoy the cool delights of the Lotus. Now, very quickly, a sudden friendship grew between Farrington and Madame Beaumont. They stood and talked for a few moments.
"I have seen too much of the usual summer hotels," said Madame Beaumont, with a small but sweet smile. "Why go to the mountains or the seashore? We cannot escape noise and dust there. The people who make noise and dust follow us there."
"Even on the ocean," said Farrington sadly. "Those same people are all around us. What shall we do when they discover the Lotus?"
"I hope they don't discover the Lotus this week," said Madame. "I only know one other place I like as well. It is the beautiful home of a prince in the mountains in Europe."
"The best people," said Farrington, "are seeking for the quiet places like this one, where they can escape the crowds."
"I promise myself 3 more days of this delightful rest," said Madame Beaumont. "The next day, my ship sails."
Harold Farrington's eyes showed that he was sorry. I too must leave then, he said. But I am not sailing for Europe.
We cannot stay here forever, though it is so delightful, said Madame Beaumont. I like it better than my usual life, which is too full of people. I shall never forget my week in the Hotel Lotus.
Nor shall I, said Farrington in a low voice. And I shall never like the ship that carries you away. On their last evening, the two sat together at a little table. A waiter brought them something cool to eat. Madame Beaumont was wearing the same beautiful dress. She seemed thoughtful. When she had finished eating, she took out a dollar.
Mr. Farrington,
she said with a smile that everyone in the Lotus loved.
I want to tell you something. I am going to leave early tomorrow morning because I must go back to work. I work selling women's clothes at Casey's shop. That dollar is all the money I have. I won't have any more till I get paid at the end of the week. You're a real gentleman and you've been good to me. I wanted to tell you before I went. For a year I've been planning to come here. Each week I put aside a little of my pay so I would have enough money. I wanted to live one week like a rich lady. I wanted to get up in the morning when I wished. I wanted to be served by waiters. I wanted to have the best of everything. Now I've done it. And I've been happier than I ever was before. And now I'm going back to work. I wanted to tell you about it, Mr. Farrington, because I thought you liked me, and I liked you. This week I've told you many things that weren't true. I told you things I've read about. They never happened to me. I've been living in a story. It wasn't real. I wanted you to think I was a great lady. This dress I'm wearing, it's the only pretty dress I own. I haven't paid for it yet. I'm paying for it a little at a time. The price was $75. It was made for me at O'Dowd and Levinsky's shop. I paid $10 first, and now I have to pay a dollar a week until it's all paid. And that's all I have to say, Mr. Farrington, except that my name is Mamie Siviter, and not Madame Beaumont. Thank you for listening to me. This dollar is the dollar I'm going to pay for my dress tomorrow. And now, I'll go up to my room.
As Harold Farrington listened, his face had not changed. When she had finished, he took out a small book and began to write in it. Then, he pulled out the small page with his writing on it and gave it to her. And he took the dollar from her hand. I go to work, too, tomorrow morning, he said, and I decided to begin now. That paper says you've paid your dollar for this week. I've been working for O'Dowd and Levinsky for 3 years. Strange, isn't it? We both had the same idea. I always wanted to stay at a good hotel. I get $20 a week. Like you, I put aside a little money at a time until I had enough. Listen, Mamie, will you go to the pleasure park on Coney Island with me on payday? The girl who had been Madame Eloise d'Arcy Beaumont smiled.
I'd love to go, Mr. Farrington. Coney will be all right. Although, we did live with rich people for a week.
They could hear the night noises of the hot city. Inside the Hotel Lotus, it was cool. The waiter stood near, ready to get anything they asked for. Madame Beaumont started up to her room for the last time. And he said, "Forget that Harold Farrington, will you? McManus is the name. James McManus. Some call me Jimmy."
"Good night, Jimmy."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.